Okay, so what I want to do is just go through some data that's in a report that's sitting on your table and is freely available online. I just want to show you very quickly. I'm going to go through these slides with the explicit purpose of making you think, oh, I really should remember where that report is. Because the data in here is the data we need to help win the fights that we have been losing so spectacularly for so long. And that is that our mining activity continues to grow unchecked and largely untaxed. Our greenhouse emissions continue to go through the roof, and the tactics and strategies we've been using have been entirely ineffective at either diverting resources away from that or reducing the environmental consequences of it. So I'm not saying that all we need to do is read this report and win this fight, but I am saying that if we don't take the economic arguments that sit underneath the mining expansion head on, we won't win. If we keep countering their ridiculous economic claims with, but what about the environment, that works on 20% of the population and we lose the other 80. So just quickly, there is the mining boom. That is the prices of coal and gold in Australia since the early 2000s. The people who owned coal mines and gold mines before this started cannot believe the amount of money that is currently raining on their heads. The world is willing to pay them much higher prices, and their costs of production have barely risen. New mines are setting up. Because of this, the existing miners are making more money than they could possibly imagine. And I know that because a good old friend is a gold miner. The mining industry does not employ many people. It employs 205,000 people, which is slightly less than the number of people employed in arts and recreational services. Does anyone here work in the mining industry? See, because if Tony... Well, yeah, maybe. I was going to say, if Tony was here still, Tony Ma, that would have made this room pretty much representative of the Australian economy. Okay, because one person in a room this big is about the contribution, the mining jobs associated with the mining industry. I'll come back to the indirect effects in a minute. Put another way, here's a pie chart, just to make it really clear for you. 98.1% of people don't work in the mining industry. Since 2004, lots of jobs have been created in Australia, almost none of them in mining. The big graph is all the new jobs created since 2004 in the non-mining sector. The little one is the jobs created in the mining sector. Is the mining sector growing rapidly? Yes. Is it a major employer? No. How do you reconcile those two arguments? Because when a small business goes from employing one person to employing two people, what happened? Its employment just doubled. Okay, the mining industry's employed an extra 40 or 50,000 people, and in a population of 22 million, that's trivial. But compared to the trivial number of people they used to employ, in percentage terms, it's growing very rapidly. Mining is very profitable. You know this. Mining does not pay much tax. You probably don't know this. Mining does not pay a lot of tax in percentage terms. They talk about tens of billions of dollars in tax they pay, and that's because they sell and make hundreds of billions of dollars in profits. So yes, they pay a large absolute amount of tax compared to what you and I think of as a lot of tax, but in percentage terms, compare them to the wholesale trade or even our good friends in the finance sector, the mining industry are a lightly taxed industry. Now, here's the first one. This is some, I think, some very important, a very important finding. And I should add, where's Dave? Where's Dave Richardson? Okay, my colleague Dave Richardson. I'm sadly for the Australian Institute, I'm the beauty and he's the brains. Dave, I don't know why you're laughing. Dave, when he first showed me this graph, it had an extra line in it and we ended up taking it out. But he walked in and he was just smiling from ear to ear. And well, he should, because what this graph shows is that mining output has increased by 5% of GDP since the boom began, and non-mining exports have declined by 5% of GDP since the boom began. That's a fancy, long-winded way of saying exports haven't risen. We've just swapped mining exports for non-mining exports. Australia is not experiencing an export boom. It is experiencing a mining export boom. And along with the mining export boom comes with a non-mining export bust. We are substituting, we are crowding out non-mining exports with our mining exports, largely through a very, very high exchange rate, which, as luck would have it, is the next slide. Now, so again, that shocking fact is going to disturb the mining industry. It's going to disturb the contemporary economic debate in Australia, and the more people who remind people of it, the more disturbing it will be, which is good. The front page of today's Australians, Wayne Swan has given Labor's strongest indication that it's prepared to amend its industrial relations laws in response to business claims that the laws are inhibiting growth and productivity. Well, you ain't seen nothing. Well, you have. Sorry, it's Louisa, was it? Okay. Here's another wonderful graph from Dave. What this shows is that the straight line that's trending upwards is productivity, labour productivity in the non-mining sector. Okay? Labour productivity in the non-mining sector. Look at it, tanking. No, that's the mining industry's productivity. The mining industry's average output per worker has fallen from $1.2 million per worker to $600,000 per worker since the boom began. That massive reduction in output per worker in the mining industry is dragging down our national figures. That massive reduction in the productivity of the mining industry is so big that if you don't break the data up into mining and non-mining, even though mining's only 10% of GDP, that massive decline is actually dragging down our national productivity figures. And average productivity has slowed. Average productivity growth has slowed. And that's what's leading people to say we need industrial relations laws. Well, unless the industrial relations laws have got something to do with shutting down the mining industry, they're going to have absolutely no impact because there is no trend reduction in productivity growth from workers. My point again at the beginning, if we don't understand the mining industry better, if we don't argue with them head on, if we don't take the ridiculous claims being made by them and their apologists and challenge them directly, we'll end up having a fight about whether industrial relations reform is good or bad when we should be having a fight about what's the contribution of mining to the economy. And getting us to have the wrong fight is very, very much part of their strategy. So Swan is apparently going to change IR laws because business have told him, right, because business claims that the laws are changing, inhibiting growth. Well, they're just not. And this data comes straight from the Australian Bureau of Statistics. Page 6 of today's Australian says, in response to the report we've released today, the Australia Institute has dressed up its ingrained prejudice against the mining industry in a deeply flawed report that flies in the face of common sense and established facts. I agree, Mitch. That's Mitch Hook. I agree. Operative terms here, not about the ingrained prejudice. I don't dress it up. about the flying in the face of common sense and established facts. That's what he's criticising our report for. Hold that thought. We surveyed 1,400 Australians and asked them, what percentage of the workforce do you think works in mining? The common sense established fact in the head of most Australians is that 16% of Australians work in mining. The answer is 1.9. The common sense established fact in the minds of the Australian public is that mining accounts for 34%, 35% of GDP. The actual fact is 9% of GDP. Mitch says our report is flawed because it flies in the face of common sense and establish facts. No, Mitch, our report is essential because it flies in the face of common sense and the established facts. Because the facts established by the mining industry through expensive television ads, through their friends in the media, through their apologists in government, those established facts and that common sense have led to one of the starkest disparities between rhetoric and reality I've ever seen. The only thing people underestimate about the mining industry is its extent of foreign ownership. The average Australian thinks 50% of mining is foreign owned, and the actual answer is 83%. So that's why I think if you want to have fights about the mining industry, need to have a look through our report. There are some simple, demonstrable facts in the very unpostmodern version of the term fact that we need to equip ourselves with if we're to have an argument, which is quite different, about what kind of Australia we want to have. Because we're being told that the kind of Australia we have to have is an Australia that digs up its resources as quick as it can. It's indifferent to the views of local communities. We couldn't care less about climate change. We just have to do it, and we have to do it quick, and we have to do it, and we have to subsidise it while it's happening, because if we don't, it will be bad for the economy. The economy is the trump card that is used to overwhelm arguments about democracy, arguments about values, argument about community, and ironically, even arguments about long-run economic development strategy. Simplistic assertions about jobs, simplistic assertions about exports, simplistic assertions about productivity are being used to force communities into outcomes, to force our society into a development path that most of us are queasy about, if not openly hostile. Look, the main point that I want to make is that if we want to challenge the kind of country that we've heard about, if we want to challenge the priorities of our state and local governments, then we need to understand the arguments being put forward by those who are proposing these changes. It sickens me. It really sickens me to hear the mining industry, that is those who own the mines, talking about their concern for jobs in Australia. It sickens me that we have a public policy debate in which the CFMEU, Tony here this morning, will look you in the eye and say, I represent the mining workers. It's Tony's job to represent mining workers, and please, you should tax the bejesus out of these people because you should see how much money they're making, and by the way, you should slow the rate of expansion. The guy whose job it is, who's democratically elected to represent mining workers, says, don't worry about jobs, go do what's good for Australia. And the foreign mining industry says, oh, we're worried about jobs. And we're worried that if you slow our growth, it'll cost jobs. And this is actually passes for public debate in Australia. I can't think of another example where a union speaks in favour of a regulation on the basis that it will have no impact on jobs, or if it does, it's still in our national interest. And the proponents, who have a history of sacking workers every time they invent some slightly better technology, put their hand on their heart and say, we have no choice, this is the only way for us to create jobs. And the mining boom, the massive mining boom that we're experiencing, and as Paul pointed out this morning, actually, we're only just at the beginning of it. We are talking about trebling our export coal capacity in the coming decades. And I'll end with a picture of just how big that is in a second. But we're talking about trebling our export capacity for coal, for iron ore. And every new mine we say yes to means a higher exchange rate and fewer people employed in manufacturing and tourism or agriculture or anywhere else. The mining industry would, if they were here today, if they were still in the room, would tell you, well, it's ridiculous to talk about the 200,000 jobs in mining. There's 20 million people, but, you know, 200,000. What about the indirect jobs? What about the upstream jobs, the downstream jobs? That's fine. Read the report. We've looked at that. It's not many of them either. But the point is, the mining industry loves to take credit for the indirect jobs it creates. Well, we're saying they have to take responsibility for the indirect jobs they destroy. You can't have it both ways. You can't take the multiplier effect when it's delivering what you want and say that's important, and then say exchange rate effects, interest rate effects aren't our problem, you can't blame us. Well, they're either a trivially small employer, or they're a small who employs 200,000 people directly, or they're a small employer who indirectly employ about 400,000 people, but whose expansion will see hundreds of thousands of jobs lost elsewhere. So I'm hereby launching our report. I don't have a bottle of champagne. Let me just end with a little mental picture for you. We export about, we dig up about 400 million tonnes of coal a year in Australia. And to picture 400 million tonnes, picture a pile of coal 10 metres wide and a metre high that's 40,000 kilometres long. That'll get you around the earth quite comfortably. That's 1 year's coal output for Australia. And we're hoping to treble that in the coming decades. We as a society have to ask, is that the kind of Australia we want? And to those who say, well, our economy requires it, we have no choice, I suggest you read our report. Thank you.